So welcome everyone. My name is Vincent Lodi. I'm the Managing Director of FarmMob.com. We constantly monitor what goes on in the industry, and I'm delighted to have with me here today Maurice to talk to us about contract and permanent staffing. Maurice is the Managing Director and the recruitment expert, I suppose, who leads Headcount, which is the leading life science recruitment company in Switzerland. And I'm going to pass over to Maurice now, just tell us a little bit about yourself, Maurice, and then we'll get going.
Sure. Thanks, Vince, as always. So as I said, my name is Maurice Thornton. I actually come from an R&D background. I'm a toxicologist by background, and I worked in preclinical research, I worked in sales, I worked in HR, talent acquisition within the pharmaceutical industry, and we launched this business about 12 years ago, strictly focused on serving the life science industry on both the permanent and contract side of the business.
I just really want to find out from you a couple of things, really. Let's just talk about what's going on. So what's the trend in contract and permanent staff in the EU and DACH region at the moment?
Well, right now we're seeing an increase in the number of contractors, the ratio of contract to perm employees, and that's not just what's happening now. We're seeing that happen, or we're seeing that in the workforce planning. When we're speaking to clients, a lot of them want to build more flexibility into their workforce. I mean, you'll see like what Pfizer. I mean, that was the big announcement recently. You know, they're making huge cuts to, you know, after building up so many, and you know that's a huge expense in terms of bringing on all those people. Ultimately, you know, you're paying out permanent packages and then severance packages on top of that. It's really quite a cost just to bring costs down in the medium term. Companies are looking at that now, and in conversation with them, they're basically saying, okay, well, you know, in order to handle these spikes, we have these projects, certain R&D initiatives, you know, they really have to come up to speed on AI right now, for example. Why not make those contract positions instead of taking on a full-time permanent workforce? So all in all, I mean, just if you ask the general trend, we do see that. We also see sort of these external full commercial service providers for US companies. A lot of US biotechs come to Switzerland and the DACH region in particular. And they will come in, they'll build, you know, regulatory, they'll build medical, they'll do access, sales, all the field positions, your procurement, your supply chain, all of that. Now some of these companies, like you know, the Eversanas of the world or Cencora, formerly AmerisourceBergen, are starting to offer this kind of full service model where they, you know, maybe hire a few European employees, but then the entire commercial launch and regulatory approval of the products are actually handled by an external provider. That's still fairly new-ish, and so it still seems to shake out kind of how that's going to work. But a lot of those companies do hire those people as contractors anyway. So, you know, again, it's sort of a temporary solution.
Yeah.
So all in all, on the way up.
Okay, so do you think some of that is primarily a lot of companies trying to be a little bit more agile with their talent sourcing and what they're actually doing?
100%. I mean, I just had a conversation today with a very large company about this, and they want to be more flexible. I mean, the speed at which things will begin to change moving forward, I mean, we're all wondering if we're going to have jobs in the next 10 years, right? So in order to remain as flexible as possible, and to, you know, a lot of companies are switching over to skill-based recruitment. So, you know, if you have a temporary workforce, you can basically take one skill set once a project's done. You can maybe migrate some permanent employees, but the odds are you probably can't. So why not, you know, have a group of contractors who can then move on to their next gig, job, in their area of expertise, and meanwhile gaining a breadth of experience with multiple companies. And then those companies can then rehire for the skill sets they need on the contracting side.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm seeing it all the time. So what are these external service providers and what do they actually do?
I mean, we mentioned you've got kind of a HR or talent acquisition type of audience here. So I think the best way I could compare it to what you may know as an RPO, right? So RPO means we, instead of hiring permanent talent acquisition people, we basically outsource to, you know, the Alexander Manns or Korn Ferries of the world. To manage all our recruitment. It's all done in one spot. I pay them a monthly fee and they take care of everything. It's the same thing, but for commercial launch. So these companies, they will build a team internally to manage a particular client, but they also can, you know, tap into one resource, maybe for multiple companies, right? So if I'm an expert in market access, I don't have to just work with one company. I can service multiple companies. And therefore, keeping that flexibility. So it's really an external service provider to launch your product in Europe or elsewhere for that matter. It doesn't have to be just Europe.
Okay. And that's really to address the peaks and troughs in recruitment, depending on what the business is doing, what the market's doing, all those types of things.
I think largely the people I've spoken to about it's de-risking. So these are companies with, I don't know, I mean, the ones that I've spoken to anyway, either maybe have a very short market window, maybe due to patent issues, maybe due to competitors with superior products who are going to come later. How are we going to build it? Like building a team takes time, right? And if I want to launch as fast as possible, I can have my team in place almost immediately, get my product launched, start serving those patients, obviously bringing that revenue much sooner. And therefore, I think that that's a bit of an advantage. In some cases, we see companies, let's say in a phase 2A in the US, they really think that Europe is going to be great for them. But we have an example of a client, they built about 120 people in Europe and the product's been rejected. So it won't launch. It FDA approved it, the EMA didn't. And now they have to basically let go of that most of that entire team. And, again, that if you were in that situation, you knew that this was going to happen, you would obviously go with an external provider because they're the ones who are going to be able to cut that team quickly and at a much lower cost to the company itself.
Yeah, makes sense. And given the rise of contracting, what are the overall benefits?
Well, I mean, for the clients or for the companies, I suppose you would say, it's really about risk and flexibility, right? So you don't have the risk of having to pay out massive, severance packages. You're also generally overall, you're in lower cost. So it might be that contractors are a little bit more expensive in the shorter term, but if you think about, pension contributions, bonus, stock, all of these types of things, actually a cheaper solution. For the employees, I mean, again, they get that flexibility. They get a real breadth of experience. We see it more and more in younger people. They want to see a couple of different places first and maybe even slightly different functions, like, maybe QC versus QA, or, maybe they can transition into a regulatory position at another company on that junior level where they're still quite operational and they're executing work versus strategic. Those tend to be more permanent type of employees. And then they get that flexibility. I know a lot of contractors who like to, work like crazy for 6, 8 months, and then they take, 2 months off, and then they start to come back on the market. They start to come online and ping us. And usually, depending on the type of function it is, it's very easy to put them into another company because there's always demand in some spaces. Like if we look at regulatory, it's almost always required. So if we have a contractor come to us with a great track record, we can just call up a few of our clients and say, "Hey, you need any regulatory support right now?" And the answer is usually yes.
Okay. And what are the challenges to companies and organizations when they face using contracts off, and how can these be mitigated?
I'd say the biggest risks here are going to be around compliance, legal. Some markets, it's really important how you classify those people. I mean, we have, if we think about the US back in the day, I think it was Microsoft, Nike. There was the basically, if it looks and smells like a permanent job, it has to be a permanent job, right? So you can't just indefinitely extend contractors, sort of taking advantage of that market. So that's a big risk, especially countries like Germany, for example. It's really iffy about how you're classifying those contractors. And you can open yourself up to big fines. I mean, if the government finds that you're not basically classifying those contractors correctly. And then there's also, there's other kind of risks in terms of culture, in terms of knowledge transfer. Are you keeping that knowledge in-house, or is it just walking out the door when your contractor leaves, right? So how do you effectively manage that, and how do you keep a balanced culture? So that's another big risk as well. And for the employees, I mean, the risk is that, your contract ends, you don't find another one. Right. That's I'd say. And then a long-term risk is, are you building long-term wealth, and have you set yourself up properly to take advantage of your high hourly rate, to make sure that you are, contributing to the right pensions, and properly investing your money, because there's no company to do it for you, right? There's no stock plan, there's no bonus coming at the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay. And again, what sort of categories of people are showing growth in contract roles? I mean, where is the main, I suppose, targeting coming from for companies when they're looking at people?
So generally in the roles that are always needed, and so we see a lot of that in regulatory. A big one for contractors is always CapEx, so any kind of greenfield, brownfield build outs, you need a big team to get those off the ground, but you don't need them there forever. And then companies needing to kind of accelerate knowledge in certain areas, so anything data, biostats, or these days AI, it's obviously in high demand, right? They want to bring in those experts to bring in the knowledge as quickly as they possibly can.
Okay, and I suppose going on from that, then, which countries in Europe are contracting staff more prevalent, and why is that? What countries do you think are sort of hot, or which ones are being more agile to actually bring these people on board?
Well, I think it's the countries where you do see more risk, right? And some countries will even have, quotas about how many contract staff you can have. I mean, you want to, a lot of our clients coming from the US just want to de-risk all of Europe. They're like, okay, we're going to make this contract in whatever country it is, because they think Europe is, no offense to any of the Americans on the call, but it's just basically, okay, Germany's risky, France is risky, in terms of we hire those people, we can never fire them, or it's very difficult to do so. So instead of differentiating, we're just going to blanket it out and say, okay, this role, no matter where it is going to be a contract position. So I think the roles where you have a higher risk in terms of workforce fluidity, like Switzerland would not be an example, right? I mean, Switzerland is very fluid in terms of the way the hire and fire culture is. I mean, we don't need reasons here to let somebody go. It's just, okay, business doesn't work. I don't know. We're not getting along. Doesn't matter. I can let somebody go tomorrow, give them a good notice period, and that's that. Whereas in Germany, you have to go through a works council, which can make it quite complicated, and the employee rights are much stricter. So it tends to be those markets where we hear our clients say, okay, you know what, let's make this a contract position until we're kind of sure on the person and that the role is required in the long term.
Okay, so based on that, then, how do European labor laws and regulations impact the contract staffing in life sciences? How does that affect different countries, different jurisdictions, different regulatory environments? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is cross-border, right? I mean, Europe is small enough that people can commute one country to the other, and that happens fairly regularly. It's a big theme for us. So, how is regulation affecting a contractor under employment? So it gets really sticky in terms of how much time that person's actually spending in the country, right? So if I'm hiring a remote contractor for a Swiss company, but this guy's sitting in Germany, it gets really difficult. I've got to give him a German contract, right? Unless he agrees to cross the border. I think the number is 76% of the time. It's some weird odd number. So I mean, that's really where it gets quite difficult, and it's about educating your clients, because again, we take on that risk, right? And if there's a spot check, it's on us. And if we have basically got somebody sitting in Germany earning Swiss francs on a Swiss contract and paying Swiss taxes, Germany tends to definitely not like that happening. So that's, one of the issues with Europe itself versus, let's say, countries like the US, where it's just, you could drive for days and you're not across it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare, isn't it? Okay, moving on from there, Simon, we're going to bring that to an end. We're going to ask a few questions. Has anything come from the audience or people that are attending so far?
Yeah, I got a couple of questions in the chat if you're happy to answer them. The first one is, do contract employees tend to be remote?
Yeah, I mean, since COVID, we'd see much less of a, like, COVID, it didn't matter. Everybody was at home.
Yeah.
Right. But now we're hearing it a lot from clients, like, okay, this is a 6-month contract. I don't really care where this person is. They're coming in to execute on a project. They're not going to be a long-term member of my team. Of course, I need to integrate them as best I can. But to be very honest, I just need this person to come in and execute. I need them to be up to speed right away. So therefore, I need an expert. So our clients are generally saying to us, wherever you find them, we don't care, as long as they bring the skill set we need.
Fair enough. And I guess the other question, kind of straight to the point, is who gets paid better? Short term, long term, permanent contract?
It's well, look, I mean, all in all, what we try to do when we're pricing contractors is, if we try to value it like a perm package, but it's never going to reach that, right? If you're getting into, let's say, a biotech and you're allowed to participate in a stock plan and that really explodes or the company's acquired, I mean, you're going to make a lot of money depending on your level. So I don't think it's ever going to reach the potential of permanent work. But on the short term, I mean, we have a contractor now says she's never going to go back perm because she got such a great hourly rate. And when she does the math, she's like, look, based on my pension and my bonus and everything else that goes into a perm package, I'm earning more today. And my focus is to really invest that money properly to kind of mitigate my loss on the stock side of things. So, and again, that's why we see it with younger people who just want to maybe, you know, save for their first house or whatever it might be. They're like, you know, give me that money today. I want that money now. And later, maybe when I'm settled, I'll think about moving into a more permanent role. But yeah, short term, contract, long term, it's going to be perm.
Amazing. Thank you very much. That's all the questions from the audience at this time.
Okay. Well, I've got a question for you, Maurice, really. I mean, we're seeing a lot of change in the way that people start their careers. And when they got some experience, you know, a sort of 2-3 year point, they tend to sort of move around a little bit. They sort of try and find their feet. We're seeing a big rise in people looking at the culture of the organization. They're looking at hybrid working. They're also looking for companies that are prepared to help them with things like well-being issues and that type of thing. And we're starting to see very complex personalized development roadmaps put in place. Obviously, they're not going to do that for contractors. So how do contractors keep up with that from a an individual personal development point of view?
Yeah. I think what the contractors are really after is the flexibility. And, you know, their learning takes place by seeing a bunch of different environments. Culture is super important. And that's, you know, that's what I kind of alluded to previously, is that it's tough to strike that balance. You know, I mean, we have one client here, not to get into any names, but they held separate Christmas parties for their permanent employees and their contractors, which, you know, I've been told in the US is more common, but you know, I'm unaware. I can tell you those contractors are not very happy about that. You know, they didn't feel very valued, right? Because they don't feel like part of the team. So I think that, you know, companies can really make an effort to include contractors in company events, like town halls, for example. That's another one where contractors are not invited. And again, it's a complaint coming back to me consistently. Now, there can be confidentiality issues around that, but they've all signed a confidentiality agreement. And they're much as likely to talk as a normal employee is. You know, when they're down the pub or whatever, you know, they have a chat with their friends, you know, they're gossiping. Contract versus term doesn't really matter. So, you know, we've told those clients, hey, it would be great if you could maybe invite them to a Christmas party or a town hall. So, yeah, I mean, I think that contractors tend to be more focused on their, of course, they want to do a great job, but they're there to earn. And so for them, maybe the culture is not as important, but you're right. I mean, we do see that now where we have people, previously it was very money driven, but now we see a lot of, you know, younger people who are saying, no, I want a great place to work. I want a place that cares about me, you know, and treats me like a human being, right? But I find that that tends to come a little bit more when people get very serious about their career. And some people early on, they're like, you know what, I'm just going to go here. I'm going to see how it works out. And it's less important for me. When people maybe start to kind of settle down, start a family, they think about stability. And then the permanent job starts to come on the horizon. Then we definitely see people taking the culture question very seriously.
Okay. Well, look, Maurice, we invited you to come and join us because we consider you to be, you know, the number one in Switzerland and for DACH region. In actual fact, you know, your team are all scientifically trained and they've developed through your system as well. We know that a lot of clients, you know, think highly of you, but I just wanted to get one final comment from you, and that's really around the balance between permanent and contract employees evolving in the coming years. How do you think that's going to merge? Because you've already touched on some of the things that they're not liking. What do you think is going to actually happen?
I honestly think it's going to keep going up in terms of the number of contractors. This is something that we're seeing in a trend. I don't see any reason why it would stop. You know, that flexibility should be built in. And again, it's like companies don't learn. You know, our revenues and pipeline look amazing today. So let's hire, 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 hire. And this 3 or 5 year vision just seems to be sometimes very short-sighted, in my opinion. And more the people I speak to in workforce planning are telling me, hey, we're really looking at, kind of externalizing part of our workforce, and that can be at the cost of current roles. So, again, and regulatory or compliance, that's a big issue because it's very difficult to go into a country and say, okay, we're going to cut 200 jobs and hire 200 contractors. Mm-hmm. They don't tend to like that very much. But overall, I think you will see more and more of those permanent positions replaced by those kind of more fluid contracting roles in the medium to long term.
Yeah, which goes back to the agility, really, of the organization to, address the needs of the business, ups and downs, whatever they need to do. So, well, look, thank you very much for that. It's been great. Simon, do you want to round up? And thanks, yeah. Morris.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and expertise with us. It's been really, really great to have you. I understand you've got something pretty exciting coming up in the next couple of weeks. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, if there's any interest from anyone in the audience or anybody watching this video later on, feel free to reach out to hello@headcount.ch. You can see our website there. You can find us on YouTube and on LinkedIn. And we're really excited to be launching a podcast called The Leadership Lab. And this came off the demand we really get asked by a lot of people, both early in career and people going through career transitions, for advice, on career. And I used to answer all those people, but I get so many requests. And so what we're trying to do is put that in a format where people can really understand, leaders in positions, how they actually got where they are, what were their ups, their downs, the follies, and their victories. And, we're bringing on top leaders from the pharma, biotech, and medical device industries, as well as emerging digital health experts. And we just want to hear from them about their thoughts on where they got into those leading positions. So, I'm really excited and we're looking forward to launch that on the 12th of November on Spotify, YouTube, and of course it will run on LinkedIn as well.
And that brings us to the end of today's session. So again, one last time, a huge thank you to Morris for coming along and sharing his expertise with us. I think we'll all agree it's been incredibly insightful. And thanks as always to Vince for being here too and for guiding the session as always.
Lovely. Thanks everybody.
Very much appreciated. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Morris. See you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.